Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about news, specifically the France tournament. After that, we're going to be joined by Sean to talk about the Greyjoy article that was posted. And then finally, as we cry a little bit about the FAQ not coming out, we'll have some closing comments.
All right, John, this is episode 24. And episode 23 was very, very special. Do you know why?
Of course. Why'd you tell our listeners, Alex?
It was special because you weren't there. You were off gallivanting in the middle of nowhere.
So what you're saying, it was inferior to all other episodes before it.
It was not necessarily our best episode.
Definitely not our best episode.
Yeah, exactly. So welcome back, John. How was your trip?
It was smoky.
For those of you not following current affairs, John was in Saskatchewan, which is basically one big wildfire.
Yep.
You know, like into California or currently British Columbia. Basically, lots of places are on fire right now.
And there was a lot of smoke. It was like a fog all the time.
Well, glad to hear you had fun.
I did have a good time. It's just smoky.
So, have you been keeping an eye on the news over the last week?
Well, there's a huge tournament in France going on right now.
It's going on as we're recording. This is the French National Championships, and they just posted the cut. we don't know who won yet.
I think the top 32 is tomorrow, right?
Is that right? The top 32 is on a Monday?
Yeah.
And they probably have a day off because of Bastille Day. Yeah, that's why.
And you click on the thing, it says the first round will start at 9:30 to 10:20, the top 32 tomorrow.
Okay, that makes sense. Bastille Day is Tuesday, so they probably have a national holiday tomorrow. Yeah. We do have a little bit of information from that tournament. People were saying there was a major combo deck, two instances of a major combo deck being played at this tournament.
I heard it's fast, and it made the cut?
It did. It made the cut once. It's being played by Arthur Lannister. It is a Lannister Conquest deck, and that's almost all we know about it. There's one opponent who mentioned that it was 18 power claimed on turn one, and another who suggested that it was a Mace Tyrell sort of thing. So I don't know if it has to win challenges to put power on Tyrell or how it works. This is all very, very preliminary. But last year's national championships were won by an incredible combo deck.
Yep.
So this may be the repeat. He is seeded 12th.
What the French do.
12th out of 32, and so let's find out. I'm sure we'll hear more as the week progresses. So, other news. There was another tournament that actually reported this week. There was the regional in Sydney, Australia, which actually pulled 14 people, which is doing reasonably well for the Australian meta right now because they're in a bit of a downturn.
Yep, and absolutely.
That was won by Aaron Russell playing a Greyjoy the Old Way Longship Maiden's Bane. Which brings us to our next topic, the FAQ.
Is it ever coming, Alex?
They should have given us 3 weeks prior to the tournament at Gen Con. That's what they should have given us.
Well, they're going to give us almost 3 weeks, right?
Well, we got to hope it's showing up on Monday by the time people will have listened to this. But
well, even if it shows up on Wednesday, like I'm not flying out till the 29th. I don't know about you.
That's only 2 weeks.
One, two. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So Darknotch fails at math.
Well, you know, I've been away. I haven't had a lot of time. I wouldn't have been able to build decks anyways.
Right, but other people, you know,
everyone isn't supposed to be on the same schedule as me for deck building? Right. I don't understand.
Hey, if that's the case, they would release the FAQ the day before the tournament, and I'd be gold. deck building takes time. Anyway, I'm not terribly impressed with this. I think I think that's cutting it rather fine, especially now that they've started the trend of post-dating FAQs so that they can post it and say that it comes into effect in 3 weeks or whatever it is. I feel like they're cutting it fine. And the longer they wait, the more I have to feel the changes are small, because big changes are just, you know, you want the environment to be dynamic, you want it to be new, but you don't want to be forced to build a bad deck for Gen Con at the last minute.
Yeah, I agree with you. I hope that they're not making big changes. I wanted big changes. I really did. But they had to give people at least a month, at least a month to figure out the big changes. So now I'm hoping it's minor stuff, you know, fix the boats.
Well, the thing is, most of us can predict which decks will get hit to some extent. You know, we may not know exactly the ways, but the ways could really matter. I mean, the different ways of going about dealing with the LMB problem, the Longship Maiden's Bane problem, could drastically affect the meta in very different ways.
Yep, for sure.
So there is some other news. Obviously, a week has gone by. Every week we get a new house spoiler. So we're going to talk about the Greyjoy house, joined by a staunch Greyjoy player. There's also a little bit of news from both the 1.0 and the 2.0 standpoint, which is the tournament prize support for Gen Con.
Yeah. I'm pretty happy to say that they decided to up the prize support.
So you're talking about the fact that despite not having overall, they still have card designs, and so there's one for the Joust and the Melee?
Yeah, so there's an extra card design. Finally realized that Melee is, you know, as important or more important as Joust, which is great.
Well, the advantage here is I agree, and I think that by taking away overall, they don't force people to play in Melee that don't want to. Although by putting a card design, I think a lot of people will still be incentivized to try their luck in Melee. But you're no longer forced to play Melee if you don't like it, or Joust if you don't like it, if your goal is to do well in one tournament and potentially get the ultimate prize.
Yeah, which is great.
So what do you think of those? I mean, there's other stuff. They've got the alternate art cards, both for first edition and for second edition.
You know, I'm starting to get I'm losing my thrill for the alternate art cards. I think FFG needs to change it up again. Backpacks.
No, not everyone has as many gizmos and gadgets as you do.
I don't have any, really. I
mean, well, that's because you sell them off or pawn them off or give them away. But But I mean, I like that Kingslayer mat. I like the
nice.
The fact that to start off Game of Thrones 2.0, the first alternate art card they're giving is called Game of Thrones. You know, there's some fitting symmetry there.
Yep.
And then I like the art that they have on the playmat for the first edition. That sort of battle at the wall art is not one I believe I've seen before.
I agree. I think that's good. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I always want something new. Something new and shiny, and there's no new shiny. Right. That's all.
Card designs are always new and shiny.
That's it. That's why I'm happy about those.
Fair enough. Some other news that I wanted to talk about. We've mentioned spoilers from them before, but actually I really wanted to draw attention. For those of you who don't know, there's a collection of images on BoardGameGeek on a blog called For the Watch, F-O-U-R, and they've been a tremendous help scraping images from all the sources, and we have Scantrell's excellent sheet with the text of all the cards as well. But when browsing through these things, especially for the podcast, we've often been using this For the Watch article. So I wanted to point people in their direction, as well as saying that those Board Game Geek forums have picked up a fair bit of activity for Thrones. So if that's a place that you hang out around, you know, point people towards CardGameDB or help them out, help answer their questions, that kind of stuff.
It's just better for everyone when we're all playing the game that we love. More players, better time. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple.
I mean, it's not really news, but I think we're supposed to make fun of 2C1C for missing an episode. Because we would never do that, right?
Well, we never have. We never will.
Except that one we don't talk about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ah, that's what I figured. last thing that I wanted to touch on is rules related, so you can doze off.
Okay, I'll see you guys later.
There was a new Quill and Tankards regular for 2.0 talking about interrupts. That's a fairly technical aspect of the game. It has some fairly widespread ramifications, but we will be seeing the rules tomorrow, the complete documents, by the time you're listening to this, hopefully, because they did promise them with the Martell article, so we'll have lots more rule stuff to go on, so we won't dig into that this week. And I did want to mention as well that I have started up the rules forum on CardGameDB for second edition. So there's already a forum there to start talking about second edition. There's already a rules board. I've got some guidelines. People have already started asking questions, despite the fact that we don't have rules documents to answer them. But if you do have second edition rules questions now, that's one of the places to go. K-Tom has been checking it. I've been checking it. And as soon as we actually get the rules documents, there may even be some questions answered.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe there won't be any questions. Maybe once the rule documents comes out, it'll just be so simple, so elegant. There'll never, ever be a need for people like me and K-Tom.
There'll always be a need for you and K-Tom.
Ah, oh, thanks, John. All right, so we're joined to discuss the Greyjoy article by Sean.
He's one of the fantastic people that helped us make our alternate art cards. Thanks, Sean. No problem. Yeah.
So we're, of course, talking about House Greyjoy. House Greyjoy, the newest house to get spoiled, although, again, by the time you're listening to this, you'll probably have seen Martell, and more importantly, you'll have seen the rules document, which is what we're all really excited about. But in the meantime, Greyjoy will have to tide us over.
Rules. So what you're saying, Alex, just to be clear, is that you like the rules more than House Greyjoy?
No, I like the rules more than House Martell.
And of House Greyjoy and the rules, where do they land?
You always ask the difficult questions, John. This is hard-hitting journalism.
I understand. That's like a fire, and you have to save your child or your wife, and whew. Okay, and on that note.
So, Sean, you're a Greyjoy player at heart. You played boats before boats were cool. Boats for different
worlds.
But still. So, what are your first impressions?
I really like the unopposed synergies. So I think Raul had previously written an article about this. It got like a whole lot of attention. And he specifically talked about the idea of using We Do Not Sow before you trigger Euron. So there's a whole bunch of little things in between all the cards. So you've got a lot of stealth. You've got a lot of ways to get unopposed challenges with Asha. And then you can use We Do Not Sow specifically, which says, what is it, when you win an unopposed challenge, you can discard an attachment or location.
That's right, yeah.
And then you can trigger Euron, who says, after Euron's discarded a card using Pillage, put a location from a losing opponent's discard pile into play under your control. So you can target their draw cards and then take them. And every house is going to have a draw location from what we've seen. Like, I'd imagine there's going to be bomb locations for every faction. Greyjoy basically says, you know, all those bomb locations that you have, well, I have them now. And that's probably my favorite part, not only from a Nedley standpoint, but from a gameplay standpoint. We've seen how strong, I like your card, can I have it, with Mel's favor, can be.
You know, you're talking about these synergies, and I like some of the other synergies that are in the set as well. The fact that, you know, there's a warship, Great Kraken, and it actually gives Balon stealth is awesome, because that's his ship. And the fact that it gives this little tiny boost to that character is cool. And then, of course, it has its extremely powerful reaction, which is, you know, after you win an unopposed challenge, either draw a card or gain a power. So in and of itself, it's an awesome card. But that little Nedley nod that they give to Balon Greyjoy, I think is just icing on the cake. These little synergies.
I'd like to talk about Balon, because people have been looking at this card and saying, oh, yeah, he's just got Intimidate from 1.0. Intimidate worked on your own characters. This doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's way better.
This is the same function as the old Balon from 1E, the one who would only zap defending character strength. Because a lot of people don't know that as you said, Intimidate would stop your own characters from counting their strength. And there was a version of him printed specifically to get around that. I've actually had to correct my opponents sometimes when they put in multiple characters with Intimidate. I'd be like, well, you know that character's zero strength now, right? Mm-hmm. And then they kind of make a face like, I can't believe it.
But I think with both Renown and the ability to get an unopposed challenge, and the fact that he can gain stealth, and the fact that Great Kraken can give us power, we might be looking at the strongest Rush faction at a glance.
Because for sure.
That and the fact that we've seen Asha as well, who can stealth and participate in multiple challenges.
And Euron has Renown.
Yeah, I think it seems likely that Greyjoy is the Rush faction. I don't know if that's a long-term niche, because that hasn't played out very well for Baratheon in 1.0, but the way that they're assembling it, I quite like.
But I think they're assembling it with some of the things that have worked for Baratheon now, which is recursion. So we have things like Aaron Dampair, where after you win dominance, you can put an Ironborn character from your dead pile back into play. So it's kind of playing on the old Greyjoy theme of, you know, what is dead can never die, and bringing things back to life. But it's also kind of like a recursion theme like the old Bera had, too. So is Greyjoy the new Bera?
That's a really good observation. I like it. I think that one of the really strong advantages that Greyjoy had in first edition as well was all the saves, which is doubly important, in my opinion, in a no-valor environment, because there's going to be a lot of targeted kill. We've seen targeted kill already, right? With Stark, I think they had targeted kill.
We've seen White Moraine, we've seen Dracarys, we've seen...
Absolutely. A targeted kill that stops burn, but what is it, Risen from the Sea?
Yep.
So you get a boost of strength off that, and you get an attachment, which would then counter any if-no-attachment text. That's
yeah,
really huge.
Which we've already seen on Plaza of Punishment.
Absolutely.
And only target characters without attachments.
I think saving your big characters that are going to be targets for killing is more important than saving characters post-Valar, like, because we don't have a Valar. We have Wildfire, right? So you're thinking, oh, my big characters are forever invincible, but if Euron's on the board, someone's going to be targeting him.
Now, I do want to point out, this Risen from the Sea is almost a reprint from before. It's zero cost, which is hugely important because...
I think it's super crazy in this meta, right? Like, zero cost is big.
Well, I think in anything that's a reaction like this to something that could potentially happen, like we could eventually get a Valar, and then you'd need it to be zero cost or you wouldn't be able to play this in the plot phase. So that's kind of important. But I think it's important...
Unless we get ways
also
of generating gold in other phases.
That's true. But the most important word I see in differing between this and the first edition version is that the attachment is terminal, which means that you don't get to then kill the character, bounce Risen from the Sea to your hand, and use it on the character, which I'm so glad that they did not allow that.
Yeah, that would have been ridiculous.
Repeatable saves that you can take, you basically have to burn through them again and again and again to kill characters would not be very fun.
I think that was a necessary change or addition. You couldn't have a repeatable save like that unless it was like 3 gold, and even then.
We do see a lot of a keyword we haven't seen in many other houses in Greyjoy, that stealth keyword, right? It's not just on Asha and the Great Kraken who can give it to Balon, but we have Master Windermere as well, right? So just these little chuds with stealth are going to be very effective, I think, in 2.0.
Now, Windermere is funny because it actually came up in a conversation the other day. He's one of those characters that we all know about Greyjoy in 1.0. And so somehow we all have this strange idea that he's maybe an important character in the books. It turns out that the flavor quote for him is not even about him. It's about another maester. I think he's mentioned as a single line in the book. He's a nobody. And so when some people are like, Windermere's iconic and he's supposed to save,
and you're like, not really.
Yeah, if you reevaluate his position in the books.
He's the maester that snuck on to the Iron Islands and stuck around. Stealth fits him.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I don't think the maester culture and the Westeros culture has really penetrated the Iron Islands that much. There's only the one house that really does it. It was, I'm incorrect. It's Windermere's the House Greyjoy maester. Yeah. But there's another house that actually uses great maesters.
Didn't the Greyjoy ones kill their maester after he caused one of Theon's brothers to die from a failure?
Oh, yeah, Maester Quaylen.
Quaylen, that's right. This is not a comment I would normally evade, but because we had Florian on the show last week and he was playing proxy for Draki, in the current spoiler article, we already have as many female characters spoiled for Greyjoy as were in the entirety of first edition. That's not quite true. There's also Saltwife. Almost. We're at 2/3.
That's true, actually. I was thinking about that, how the Iron Islands fishmonger is a lady and has some of the nicest art I've ever seen.
Has some very nice
art. It's very nice art, yeah. Props to the artist. I can't really see his name here, but
it seems like a kind of a shame, too, that Maester Windermere has such nice art just to be a 2-cost, 2-strength, single icon stealth. He does nothing.
That's pretty good in 2.0.
Yeah,
I think that's good.
I'm sure it is, but it's going to get replaced, right? There's going to be better cards down the line, and then this beautiful art will just go in the binder.
I mean, we've seen stealth outside of Greyjoy on Tyrion and Arya, and that's it, right? Now, the one rant that I haven't done yet, I'm sure you can both feel it coming, is pillage as a keyword.
Yeah. I mean, Sean was telling me how much he likes that, so I'd love to hear his point of view and yours, Alex.
That's incorrect. I've never said I like pillage. I thought that pillage should have been... Oh, wait, you trapped me. You knew I hate pillage. Oh, you crafty dog. I think putting a mill one card off the top as a keyword is just so useless. Like, we've seen how empty mill is. I mean, now mill is a win condition, I understand. But
you have to mill 60 cards, which means you have to win 60 challenges, which means you've already won the fucking game.
He's going to draw at least two cards a turn, so you really only need to win 30 challenges.
Okay, and say you have two guys to pillage, so it's only 15. Oh, wait, that's already a win condition.
Yeah, let's say that your character with pillage has renown.
Less useful, right?
All we need is a location printed that says pillage does something else. Every time you pillage, do something else. And then maybe pillage is useful.
But then it needs do something else. You might as well just print pillage with the something else.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, is that it kind of feels like it needs support from other cards to exist. And it's interesting that Euron, I mean, I will give him credit here. They're using the keyword in Euron's reaction text, right? That's kind of neat. I do like that synergy. I like to see more of that on cards where pillage can be useful in an isolated situation. I don't want to see a Wendemir where it's like a two-drop character with pillage, and that's all he has.
And here's the thing. If they actually start to put pillage on characters that are, like, Nedley, we're going to see, like, what, all the wildlings with it, like, half the Greyjoy people with it.
Probably Gregor Clegane and his...
Gregor Clegane, yeah, and the roaming bands from Lannister. We're going to see the Brotherhood, right?
Yeah.
If that's what they were doing. Like, they were just stealing from everyone else.
There's Stark characters that were pillaging as well.
Yeah. There can be everywhere.
There is a way to do it. I mean, obviously the fact that they made it a keyword means that they plan to use it a lot, and as we have stated before, it doesn't do anything by itself. But with characters like Euron, it does, and so what you need is anything that interacts directly with the opponent's discard pile. And you can potentially see that in Lannister, for instance. You add a couple pillage characters, not only are you winning entry challenges and discarding cards, you're discarding some from their deck, and then having something that counts the number of characters in a discard pile or something for the
strength. Here's the problem.
Could work.
It's these critical mass things, right? It's like pillage is going to be useless. It's going to be okay, and then it's going to be broken. And there's no, like, easy way for FFG to moderate that. Because as we get more and more cards with it, say we can build a deck with every single character has pillage, and I only have to win four challenges with my four characters to basically deck you, right? Then it's a huge problem. So there's no happy median, because now they have to always think of that secondary draw your deck win condition. It's
well, I don't think it's a little scary. That's a problem. So long as
really?
Well,
if I can win four challenges and deck you,
isn't the text on the win condition if you cannot draw a card from your deck when you must lose?
Right.
Okay. So that does seem that's an auto loss. If we get a Maester Bearer situation where somebody could do extreme decking with pillage keywords, I don't know how that works. I'm going to disagree with you, John, right there.
Yeah, I disagree with John.
You have to win a challenge to pillage.
Yeah, but if I have five all my characters have pillage, and I attack you with five characters, I pillage five cards, right?
Right.
Yeah, and
really, I do that four times, and that's 20 cards, and I win.
Yeah, so over.
So
four
I won four
turns.
Challenges, and I won.
Four rounds?
Over four rounds.
If I couldn't stand my characters in any way, or if there's no other effects that geared off pillage. So what you guys were saying was, pillage will work if there's other effects. So if there's actually effects that let me, like this, take locations, take characters from the discard, take gold based on the number of characters or locations, it means that pillage will hit a threshold where it's actually broken. And
no,
until then, it's not good.
Renown doesn't hit that threshold either. Right? Renown is good. If I have four characters with Renown and I win that one challenge a turn,
here's the difference.
I still haven't broken the game.
Because the Renown characters are actually gaining power on themselves. And when you kill that character, they lose the power. But pillage is just like power on the house that you can't actually take back off. I'm just decking you. So even if you kill my character, he's actually done his damage, and that win condition stays constant.
That's true. If you're thinking about pillage, you have to think about the cards in your opponent's deck are now your power tokens. You're trying to get 60 of them. And they're drawing, and every time they draw, they're giving you a decrease on their on your win condition, right? They're getting you closer to winning. Yeah. So I think that's an excellent point. That would only happen if they like reprinted cards like was it Support of Harlaw, where you restand when you discard a card. I mean, if things like that start to happen.
Well, what I'm saying is that's the problem. Pillage won't be good until they do that, and when they do, it's like there's OP. A tipping point. Yeah, it goes OP. I don't think there's an easy way for them to make it so that Pillage is good but not broken.
You want to hear the answer we're all going to hate and disagree with? It's run rebuilding times two in your plot deck.
Okay. That's a horrible answer.
That is a horrible
answer. I think DC would disagree. They don't like running answer cards.
So. Yeah. DC disagrees with you, Alex.
Don't make me
get little C on the show again to disagree with you.
There are ways to fix this, which is having recursion, which I don't think is a particularly good idea either. But you can potentially introduce a keyword that allows you to recur cards from your discard pile.
So we can fix this through a whole bunch of not good ideas.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So otherwise, Pillage will be completely useless until it's broken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm glad we all agree now.
Well, as a keyword, it'll be completely useless except for effects that interact with the discard pile.
Right. Yeah. It'll be useless for when it's not useless. Like on your own.
But here's the thing, yeah. It's only useful on your own because he has both the Pillage keyword and the effect. For people that just have the keyword or just the effect, I don't know if I'm going to play them.
We haven't seen any of them yet, though. Right? So if there is another one, if there is that Wendemir that you're talking about with Pillage, if you're running Euron, the pillaging from Wendemir makes a slight difference in that it increases the chance of you finding a card that you want to
use. You may run that Windermere at that point if you're dumb, because there's a Windermere with stealth printed.
Okay, yeah, the Windermere with stealth is better. It's a better
thing. Like a non-unique character with only Pillage, you stack those next to your Euron, you trigger all of their effects first, make you discard their Red Keep, and then you use Euron and grab the Red Keep.
I totally agree. I understand the idea. Yeah. What I'm saying is that when you print enough of those characters to be really useful so that you can reliably do that, then you've probably broken Pillage and we're back into the bad category.
Now, I think that you're exaggerating this from the standpoint that, to me, it's still challenge-based interaction. So it is a problem if we wind up with the Maesters of 1.0, where you can kneel, stand, and then discard his deck and it's completely uninteractive.
As long as you're requiring him to win a
challenge, like you're saying, with four characters, he has to win a challenge. He has to do it for four rounds in a row. That's not that scary a situation.
You know, or it might get dangerous is if they have an attachment that gives you Pillage and a Pillage effect, and then you put it on Asha, and now she can restand herself, especially if she has a little bird. And now doing it three times. Any effect that stands, but I guess I'm looking at the existing cards.
Even more than anything that adds, like, every time someone discards a card for Pillage, discard an extra card, stuff like that. Like, there's
Motley Crue.
It's going to be a very fine line that FFG is going to have to walk now with this keyword. And
yeah,
the keyword's not that freaking good. They should have stayed away from it.
I think they should have stayed away from it. I think now that it's there, it's here to stay. But the way that they should do it is not reach that sort of threshold where pillaging is a normal thing, but introduce a few cards that work like Euron and interact with the discard pile. And
sure, like the old Corpse Lake.
Corpse Lake is a fine example. Corpse Lake.
I know you guys are going to disagree with me, but I actually like mill as a win condition. If it's tempo the same as your regular win condition. If it's not like I can deck you in two turns.
Actually, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think if you're drawing too fast.
Yeah. Yep. We don't want Bloodthirst where somebody has 14 cards in their hand. That's going to dissuade you from drawing as much. You can't also reserve value, of course, but we don't know what kind of cards are going to come out.
Last week, me and Alex were talking a lot about the fact that I think the reserve value has less of an impact on draw than he does, but your point here is actually the one I thought about after we recorded that episode, which was what I have to worry about more than my reserve is actually decking myself by drawing five or six cards around, because that's very possible. If I'm drawing six cards, I mean, I got five plots less because I set up and
if your opponent is pillaging, that's a situation where it is making the clock tick a little faster against the deck that's doing a lot of draw.
So I think that was a bigger drawback than the reserve value, which I'm less worried about, because I feel like I can just spill my hand out. But if my opponent's playing very defensive plots and he just kind of hold me off, I might not trigger those extra draw cards after a few rounds.
Barring slow players or new players, this might also create a more stable, consistent playtime. We're probably not going to see those two-hour games of Bloodthirst of the days of old.
Right, because people were playing with non-timed games and fun play and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, sometimes you run against the clock in an hour game in Gen Con. I know Gen Con last year, didn't they reduce the rounds down to like 50 or 55 minutes or something?
Well, Montreal was great. They had 60-minute rounds, right, or something while we were there?
Yeah.
So that, you know, you could easily play 9 plots. I think me and Alex went to 7. So, drawing 18 cards, 20 cards, easily.
So wrapping up the 2.0 segment here, this is Greyjoy. This was my favorite house in 1.0. I have very high hopes for it in 2.0 because I still think that the unopposed thing is a very good introductory mechanic to have in the core set. I think it's a lot of fun. I still like the art style a lot. I like the coloring, the templating. So I think it's
all right,
it's
Gen
likely
Con.
To be my first place to start.
Kingslayer. Both of you are playing in it, right?
Yep.
Alex?
Yes.
Okay. So we're all playing Kingslayer. Just making sure. Greyjoy for both of you.
I don't want to give away my tech.
Well, it's not about tech. It's about love of your house. You both love this house. Are you going to play it or not?
It goes without saying that I will play Greyjoy if I ever have to pick between houses, but I'm not going to say it. There's a reason it goes without saying.
There is one more incentive that might make all of you feel like you want to play Greyjoy, and that is our spoiler for this week. Sean, would you care to read our spoiler for this week?
So we're looking at Theon Greyjoy. He's a 4-cost character with military and power. He's 3 strength, and much like his sister, he has stealth.
He's in more stealth.
Very good. Yeah, more stealth Greyjoy, right? He has ally, Ironborn, and Lord as his traits. So he's an ally. His reaction reads, after you win an unopposed challenge in which Theon Greyjoy is participating, he gains 1 power.
Ooh.
This reminds me of the Ironborn Captain, or whatever it's called, Iron Fleet Captain. From first edition. He was really great in the unopposed decks. But that kind of conditional renown, it's like he feels fairly balanced with that. It's not like he has stealth and renown and an ability or something. He has basically stealth and a conditional renown.
Which is great. And, I mean, it goes back to what Alex was saying, that maybe Greyjoy has this unopposed rush tech, right, where they don't have renown in this case, but if they win an unopposed, it's even more power.
Absolutely.
I like that.
He also works nicely with his sister. If you put them both into a challenge, he gets the power, she gets to restand. You get
double stealth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a power challenge. You got some Windermere in there. Triple stealth.
That's interesting that he's an ally. Have we seen many allies yet?
We've seen allies like the Iron Isle.
The Reducers as well, yeah.
Like Littlefinger and Varys and so on. So we've certainly seen allies. We haven't seen that trait mean anything. We've seen the Lord trait mean something with a noble cause, but we have not seen the ally trait. Actually, the Ironborn trait matters. So
true, he can be brought back with Aeron.
With Aeron specifically. And he can be given the throwing axe.
But it's kind of interesting because we haven't seen Greyjoy have a lot of allies in first edition.
And they've seen 2 in the spoiler article.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So, and it actually makes more sense to me that Theon and these other characters are allies. So I think they're being a little bit more Nedly this time around.
That's true. A lot of the Greyjoy characters or Ironborn characters are there. They're not exactly known for the loyalty.
Exactly, yeah.
No, what is the line? Every captain is a king?
Yeah.
Yes.
Every captain's a king. Yeah.
And the last good point I'm going to make, there's only 1 entry card that we've seen spoiled so far out of Greyjoy. That's
Euron. Which is Euron.
Right? Yeah. So Little Bird is going to be incredibly useful out of Greyjoy. I mean, it's going to be incredibly useful everywhere, but especially out of Greyjoy on that Asher card. Now she's a Tricon, stealth, stands on all unopposed challenges from all challenges. Hopefully, in a perfect world.
So, John, you quizzed us on what we're playing. What are you playing in the Kingslayer tournament?
Martell.
You haven't even seen them yet.
Well, I didn't like any of the other houses, so I'm going to pick them right now. And if they turn out to be really bad, then I don't know. I'll roll a dice.
Closing comments, John. I have a feeling that next week's episode is going to be a monster.
Yeah, if FAQ comes out. Now, there's always the chance that it doesn't come out and they're going to play a really fun game and just drop it the day before Gen Con.
Yeah, just in case you didn't pack the right cards or a deck that doesn't. Yeah, bring your entire collection to Gen Con.
That's what one thing a suitcase is for.
Of course, just my cards. I wasn't talking about that. I mean, Gen Con, FAQs. No, I was talking about the fact that the 2.0 rules article comes out tomorrow.
I know.
We're going to have a nice big episode about that, definitely.
Yeah. That'll be great.
It is the four last week of regional season.
It is.
I know. Once there are no regionals in your area, you tune out a lot.
A lot.
There's actually, I think they're all stateside. There's one in Sacramento. There's one in Morgantown, one in Seattle, and one in Chicago. So only the U.S. delays the regionals to the very before last weekend, which isn't fair because there are actually two regionals outside of the states the weekend after that. But details. So if you're in any of those regions, well, at least you aren't upset about not FAQ. I don't know. Even then, it's probably post-dated, so it wouldn't make a difference. Anyway, sorry. Yep. So, let's see this FAQ.
So I have a question for you, Alex. With this combo deck in France, do you hope the FAQ hits the combo?
I don't know what the combo is.
We're just going to see it everywhere at Gen Con.
It depends. If a first turn Nightmares destroys it, or a first turn any blanking, or any March to the Wall, or whatever, then it doesn't really matter. But because if once the combo is well known, it's very easily countered without changing your deck much.
If that was the case, it won't go any farther.
Right. It wouldn't go any farther, and it wouldn't be an issue. But that's often the case. A lot of these combos, if you know that you're playing against one of these combos, you just have to play slightly differently and either, prioritize different challenges or prevent him from doing a specific thing that allows him to finish off the combo.
Well, perfect. Then we'll see tomorrow when they play the final 32, because the combo's 12th seed and everyone would have had a full night to think it through.
And we'll see how that plays out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He gets knocked out in the first round, though.
So. Yep.
That doesn't mean that combo is not going to be dangerous and not going to be a force of Gen Con. It just means that there are ways for decks that already exist out there to counter the combo. And that's what would make the difference for me.
All right.
That wasn't really a very snappy sign-off.
That was it.
With those beer caps?
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast at gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.